Welcome back, Red Ice members. Thank you very much for joining us. We are talking with Sofia Smallstorm about 9/11, the hive mentality, and kind of, I guess, the takeover of the world. We're going to progress forward, so to speak, a little bit in the agenda. We're going to talk about some of the other aspects to how world control is being instigated. We're going to talk about technology, chemtrails, nanotechnology, and much more. And I think I want to begin, Sofia, to talk a little bit about the connection between chemtrails and nanotechnology. You made a really interesting correlation here, and we don't have to go into all the details, so to speak, on chemtrails here today. People can go to our website, aboutthesky.com, to check out some of this research that you've done for yourself. But tell us a little bit about it, I guess, in regards to how chemtrails play into this idea of nanotechnology and what potentially the use of chemtrails could be, or why they're doing this.
Well, I believe that chemtrails is a multi-level program. And remember that I mentioned in the last interview, someday it'll come to rest on this little platform and the rest of it will just be swept into oblivion, obscurity. But chemtrails ostensibly will be explained as weather modification. And we're being told, oh, we have global warming and Satan's twin of global warming is climate change, right?
Yeah.
So because of this climate change, we have to take control of the weather. Climate change is going to create a future that we're not going to be able to tolerate. Just go and see Al Gore's movie. So they will bring in the need for weather modification, which they've already been doing since the 1960s. And the public will say, oh, yes, we need this. We can't argue.
Yes.
So the Hegelian principle of problem, reaction, solution is in play. It's always been in play. Yet chemtrails is bigger than weather modification. It's certainly about geoengineering, changing the entire Earth to suit human needs. And yet, you and I aren't deciding what the needs are here, you know? Somebody else is. So you and I are the mice, and it's not our lab.
That's right.
So people may even concede at some future date that geoengineering is necessary because our Earth is going to pieces. It's the environment is shot, and all the trees are dying, and we're going to have to put in new trees, and the idea, MIT, for instance, recently developed plants that can grow with toxic levels of aluminum in the soil. And they're not saying, how did all this toxic level of aluminum get here in the soil? They're saying, look at us. We figured out how to make something grow with aluminum.
Yeah.
And the people of the world, the good people of the world, will say, well, we need that because we can't shovel out all this aluminum now.
It's almost so, to me, Sophia, it's like it's becoming an artificial environment, and it's being kind of recreated, and everything that is natural is being thrown out of the window in a way.
Yes, and deliberately. I want to propose to you, you're familiar with the big seed vault in Norway, right?
Yeah, that's actually in the Svalbard. I'm very familiar with it, yes.
Okay. So we're being told that Syngenta and Monsanto and the Rockefellers, and I think even Bill Gates is involved in this. They've created the seed vault, 4.5 million kinds of seeds for the future of the Earth. And I'm saying, well, what do they know about the future of the Earth that we don't know? And let me pose this to you, Henrik. What if those seeds are not the world's most prized, pristine seeds? What if they are hybrid seeds? They're engineered seeds that they're going to use once they blow everything else to hell. They're going to come in from that seed vault with their special new seeds. These are the seeds for the future of the Earth.
Well, that
I haven't
heard before, because my take on it was obviously in according to what you just said, that something they know that something will happen on the Earth, so to speak, because they probably are going to engineer it, and then they're going to bring out after the potentially a mass of the population have been, in their terminology, taken care of, they're going to bring out these natural seeds. But I never thought that it actually might be manipulated seeds. That's an interesting take on it.
Yeah, these are the seeds for the future of the Earth. We're not being told that it's a whole new kind of seed technology. They may have some natural seeds there so that they can preserve them and splice out of them what they want to, but I bet you this is the storehouse of the new growth that's going to carpet the Earth.
Hmm. What do you think will do? Have you thought about how this will be done? One of my ideas was that they potentially, through Terminator seed technology, things like this, eventually our crops that we grow right now actually will be failing, so to speak, because of potential upcoming climate changes, which again they might have been engineering. At that point, many people will die, it will be starvation and so forth, and then this will be brought out as the solution to it. But have you thought about how they will potentially go about this? Do you think that it will be some kind of depopulation that will take place on this planet? What do you think?
I think the depopulation is already taking place. The U.S., for instance, used to be 11th in longevity worldwide. I know Sweden's really up there, but it's now 47 or 40-something.
Mm.
So the decline is stage one of the depopulation. The falling victim to cancer, for instance. Now 50% of the U.S. population gets cancer. When I was a little girl, it was 1 out of every 4 people. Now it's 2 out of every 4 people. Pretty soon it's going to be 3 out of every 4. It's headed there. And then it's going to be 4 out of 4.
Hmm.
And the person who doesn't have cancer will be the exception. So what is cancer? Cancer is a death sentence. You really can't manage it very well, right? Without them giving us their chemotherapy and radiation, they'll kill us that way.
Well, that's right.
So the depopulation is in place on those levels, and reseeding the Earth, hey, just go outside and have a look. If there are chemtrails in your country, look at the trees. I've been taking walks in various neighborhoods here, and you stand at the base of the tree and you look up into its foliage, you look up along its trunk, and half of it is dead inside. There is a white fungus growing on all the pine trees on my street. It's 3 feet up the trunk. This is new. This, I saw it in Davis when I was there in Sacramento. I was in Nevada County, which is one of the most beautiful parts of the United States, just huge. It's the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, covered with forests, and the forests are dying. The manzanita is choked with a white filamentous fungus. And you look at that fungus under a microscope, hey, guess what it is?
What is it?
Chemtrails.
Mm.
It's the same stuff that falls out of the chemtrails, and it's choking the growth everywhere. And people say up there, you know, in that area, we don't have a lot of population. Why do they spray us like this? Well, all the snow melt from the Sierras runs through those foothills into the Yuba River and other rivers like the Yuba, and that's all our water supply for California.
Hmm. Well, tell us a bit about what falls out of chemtrails for those who might not be familiar with this.
I have learned that there are 3 classes of elements in chemtrails. There are the metals, which are primarily metallic salts or oxides, aluminum oxide, barium oxide. There's strontium, titanium, various kinds of metals that are ionized by sunlight. So sunlight is a free source of electrical energy. Ionized means to capture or give up an electron. Once these particulates, these metal particulates that are sprayed, become charged electrically by sunlight, they create a conductive property for the air that they're in. So air is supposed to be neutral. We're supposed to live in air and thrive, as are dogs and cats and robins and insects and trees and everything. Air is not supposed to be electrically charged. Yet, today, the air is charged. We live in a conductive medium. This is called a plasma, when you speak in terms of physics.
Mm-hmm.
The air we live in has been weaponized it can hold and transmit energy. That was never the case in the past. Okay, so you say today, I feel stressed today. Why do we have this stress? It's because we're living in an electrically charged environment. It's like put your finger in the plug in the wall, the socket. Will you feel stressed? Yes. And worse. So, number one, the air has been weaponized thanks to the metals. The second class of elements is fibers. There are all kinds of fibers in these chemtrails. Polymer fibers abound. The polymer fibers, plastic, are very, very microscopic. Our immune system works pretty well, but when something is extremely small, the immune system's fingers, metaphorically speaking, are too big to find it. So our skin, our lungs, we're inhaling this stuff, we're absorbing it, we're eating it, and it's coming into our bodies and it's setting up shop. And our immune system is saying, wait, there's something here. I know there is, but I can't catch it. It's too small. So the fibers are the second class of elements. And what are they doing? Well, they appear to be intelligent. They appear to self-replicate and assemble inside us, and they're setting up these networks inside us. You can look under the microscope, take some of your skin, take some of your hair, take your saliva, take your blood, take your urine, create a culture from it, look at the culture under the microscope, and you will see that there are these threads of polymer material, and they create more of themselves, they create little colonies, they spin out connectors to the other colonies that they came from and that they're making their, you know, new ones of. And what are they doing this for? How are they doing this? How can they self-replicate? Well, guess what? We live in the world of plastic. Everywhere we go, there's plastic. I have plastic bags everywhere I turn in my house, and we drink out of plastic bottles, and we live in, you know, oil is all the basis of plastic. Everything in our world is made of plastic. So there's all this ambient plastic. We drink and breathe plastic bits. So our blood, they've done blood tests of people like Anderson Cooper, these TV hosts, full of plastic. So somehow this intelligent technology in its fiber form is entering our body and is making use of the plastic. And it's replicating itself.
Do you tie this together then with some form of nanotechnology?
Yes. Apparently, I've been talking to a woman who has very advanced case of what's known as Morgellons syndrome.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We can go into that a little bit.
Sure.
That is a nanotechnological principle or platform. The elements that eventually evolve, like the ones that you can see are bigger than nano, but the components of these elements are nano-sized. So, for instance, there's a video on my website. It's on my Morgellons page, aboutthesky.com, and just go to Morgellons syndrome, the tab, and you'll see a video there where scientists, mainstream scientists, admit that they bundle or cable nanofilaments in experimental people. The idea is you throw enough, you know what, at the wall, some of it will stick. So they bundle these nanofilaments, and what you are experiencing in your body is a technology that knows it has to group together. It is a hive itself, you see. This is the holographic universe at work through technology. We have a hive building, a colony, a network building within us. And I'm going to give you an analogy that I use when I speak to groups sometimes. Imagine that each human being is a field of colored light. There are red lights, yellow lights, blue lights, green lights, purple lights, all colored of lights. And these lights represent the internal regulatory system. The red and pink ones are the digestive system. The yellow and orange ones are the circulatory system. Purple is neurology. Green is respiratory. Blue is endocrine. And all the lights are flashing on and off in these beautiful patterns and rhythms because the body is coordinating itself. And so you're the mad scientist, and you come along and you look at this field of beautiful lights and you go, wow, I would like to be the one turning on those lights the way I want to. How can I do that? Well, what if I put a circuit board in the field and I hook up every light to my circuit board? Then I will turn on the colors that I want to in the ways that I want to. So effectively, this plastic technology is setting up inside us to attach to our cells. So it will someday have the ability to override our biology. What will it respond to? Well, this is where we get into the idea of HARP and the conductivity of the air. Let's just do a large to small extrapolation. HARP, you know about HARP in Alaska?
Oh, yeah.
High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program.
Yes.
It is a series of ionospheric heaters that pulses electromagnetic frequencies into the air, targeted at the ionosphere, which is above the atmosphere, which is charged. Today, the atmosphere is charged, thanks to the spraying. So big pulses go up, hit the ionosphere, they are deflected back down to Earth. They are now carried in the conductive airspace. They are retransmitted because of the way that they're angled in their original creation.
Mm-hmm.
You throw something at an angle, it will be deflected at a different angle. So those frequencies are now carried in the conductive air and sent to things like Gwen Towers, which are smaller ports on the Earth, ground wave emergency network towers. And those towers field the signal, the pulses, and they retransmit them now horizontally along the surface of the Earth, ground wave network. And those signals now traveling horizontally are fielded by smaller, more precise ports like cell phones, HD TV boxes, so that they can be transmitted even more locally to individual receivers like ourselves.
Right.
And those signals enter our bodies where the hive is there, ready to go.
Sheesh. And again, we become like a part also then in this kind of network. And we might even tap into it such a way that we actually give some kind of energy to it, right? It sustains itself through the aid of us in one sense. Because what I'm thinking about is, don't know if you heard about it, but something that was in the news back in, well, back between 2004, 2006, something like this, they talked about something called smart dust or nano dust, that this could already be something that is sprayed up in the atmosphere and we could even breathe it in one sense. And this could be basically small little robots, you know. We don't know what the crap they're doing, you know, in that sense. And even a while back, the BBC had an article up about the fact that they've managed to push through ships, you know, computer ships, through the what they call the nano barrier, which means that you have these super, super small computer ships, pretty much, that can be in a kind of a little bit larger technological organism, if you will, and these can be in the environment already. We wouldn't know.
Right, and they can be in us because silicon is a component of this technology, and these filaments appear to form at certain intervals a silicon head. There's a woman, Jan Smith, I've now put up a page about her, which I'm going to be adding to in the next few weeks, who has a lot of Morgellons coming out of her body. Morgellons, to just inform people who might not have heard of it, is the extrusion of fibers coming from the body, sometimes surrounded by very itchy, oozing sores. And these are polymers that the body is ejecting. And it has been theorized that Morgellons is universal. It's in everyone. And my new theory is that Morgellons subjects, there are some, I think it's been theorized there are about 20 million people in the U.S. already who have it.
Really?
But Morgellons people are the failed experiment because their bodies, for some reason, are rejecting the technology and trying to push it out, whereas you and I are the successes. Our bodies are integrating and assimilating the polymer technology. But these fibers, as Jan and others have studied them, have these silicon heads on them, which then bifurcate and create new shafts of polymer, only to form into another silicon head. And then, so this is how they do the replication. So there are these little clusters of slightly different material. And where are they getting the, what do they feed on? They feed on the plastic, Jan has informed me that her, some of the samples that were tested from her showed that they were composed of polysaccharides, which is sugar. And maybe that's why there's the prevalence of so much sugar
in food.
The modern diet.
Yeah.
But that's a food for this. And there's something called GNA. There are glucans that form a kind of DNA type substance. DNA is deoxyribonucleic, and I'm very, very patchy here, but something called glucan ribonucleic acid.
Mm-hmm.
Glucan nucleic acid. I don't know, GNA. Anyway. So there's something being made in us that has never happened before. We are being altered. We are being set up as almost pseudo-humans.
Hmm. Is this what scares you most about nanotechnology or new aspects of technology, or is there anything else that you feel is even more? I mean, I don't know if anything could be worse than this in that regard. But are there other aspects to this, so to speak, that also would affect us very much, as you said?
Well, first of all, I want to erase that word scare. We can't be scared. We can't talk about it. There are too many of us that this is happening to for us to be scared. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason this is happening is because it's operating while we sleep. If we can turn ourselves on frequency-wise so that we're really in gear, then this may not be able to exist in us.
Hmm.
You know the John Carpenter movie, They Live?
Absolutely. Good one.
Okay, yes. The full title is, They Live, We Sleep.
Hmm.
As long as we sleep, they live. When we wake up, they can't live anymore.
Hmm.
So we have to switch ourselves on in terms of frequency. I say to people, our consciousness is already way better and bigger than this technology that they've got, that they're trying to farm into us. But our consciousness is sleeping. So we have to wake it up. We have to become what we were put here to be. Instead of victims, we have to become creatures of intention. We are creatures of reaction-response, because they've knocked us down into that, or we've allowed ourselves to be knocked down into that. We're not creatures of intention. We wake up every day and we say, what do I have to do today? Not what do I want to do today?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that's a very good point. So in your words and in your view, then, this is something that can be, we can override this, so to speak, this potential danger, because, again, this seems to be something that we cannot... We can't control it physically, so to speak, in that sense, because it's just too well. We don't even understand the technology. We don't even know if it's implemented or not, which means that we cannot kind of target it. But I guess that what you're saying is that we can block this out. We can consciously prevent this from entering into our bodies by not allowing it in, so to speak.
We're gonna have to. What else? What other choice do we have? We're gonna have to do something about this, on a higher level than this is itself. Because otherwise we become it. It's taking us over.
Mm.
So we have to do a leapfrog. We have to get above this. We have to walk right out of this, right out of this world, right out of this situation. And I'm not speaking literally. I don't know really what I'm saying. I'm just saying that's the only way. Go ahead. If we are truly magical, I'm going to just pose a supposition to you.
Mm, sure.
Look at the earth. Just pick any environment on the earth, the savanna in Africa, pick a meadow in Sweden, pick, the desert. And you put any animal there, put a lion, put a peacock, put a rat, put an insect. It'll look fine. It'll look like it belongs. Put a human being there, clothed or unclothed, it doesn't fit. Doesn't belong. Doesn't look right. What are we? I don't know. How did we get here? I don't know. What are we doing here? So, obviously, what we're going through here is not a lot of fun when we find out about what it really is. And so, we have to become something else quickly. We have to figure it out. So, obviously, what we are doing here is not what we could be doing here because it's not working.
Is, you know, because when you talk about this, I at the same time feel that if this threat, so to speak, then wouldn't exist, we wouldn't have, see if you follow my train of thought here, we wouldn't have the reason to evolve in that sense, to better ourselves, to actually strive harder to transcend above it, which means that is this agenda fulfilling a higher purpose, a higher role? What do you think?
Well, I think you've hit on something, and you've said it really well. We are here to take this leap. This is it. We're in the vortex. Imagine a vortex. Put your two hands up. Point the fingers together. There's the vortex. Where your fingers touch, the lines that they represent are going to cross, and a whole new thing is going to open up above them. There's an eye of a needle that we're going to have to go through. And it's going to be very small and very tight. And we have to figure out how to get through the eye of the needle right at the tip of that vortex and open up a whole new dimension. That's where we're going.
Sophia, do you see that we will potentially split up into kind of two different beings, two different species almost in that sense? Because if we think about it, if their scenario becomes a success, so to speak, with the nanotechnology, the chemical, the transhuman project, they're going to be a totally different human animal out there, and potentially on the side of this, so to speak, there will be those who actually manage to get themselves out of this situation. Do you think that ever will be the case, or will it be a kind of either we will all fail or we will all succeed? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder about that. I wonder if you and I, the ones who are waking and the ones who are inviting others to awaken, if we're going to be able to get everybody through the eye of that needle. Or if there aren't enough of us, we're all going to stay in the vortex and we're going to be these, you know, talk about sheeple will be 1,000 times worse than sheeple.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's an all or nothing, or if it's going to be those who are able are going to get through that needle, the eye. I don't know. But I can tell you that if you had a checklist of what to choose to do on the earth, what you're doing is the only thing you would choose, knowing what you know, right?
Yeah.
And that's the work. That's the work that we're here to do. You and I and others like us. We're doing our work. And it's all we can do. And it's what we can do. And it is. It is. That's it. Full stop. It is. We're doing it. I don't know what everybody else is going to do.
Mm. Well, that's a good point. I want to talk a little bit more about that and what you think, you know, what people can do in one regard in their own lives, I guess, to implement this more, or you know, in that sense, become more aware of who they are, what they're doing, and what their purpose is in that sense. But if we talk about these transhuman beings a little bit again, do you think that they will be the slaves for the elite, or do you think that this is an intermediary step to something else? Are we, you know, being turned into another species, so to speak, for some higher purpose in that sense? Or what do you think is the goal of all of this, really?
Well, what you just said, that we're being converted, we are an experiment in a corridor to another experiment. The universe is just experiments. It's new creations. It's evolution. It's a revolving wheel of experiments, and everything in it becomes another experiment. It's like saying energy is never exhausted. It's always transformed into another kind of energy. Well, I can't tell you what kind of experiment we are, but we are one. And yet we have some capability of writing the end to this, or writing a little bit of the script is probably a better way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be writing. We have to be picking up the pens and writing quickly now with both hands, not left-handed or right-handed. So I wanted to mention this idea of abstract and concrete people.
Oh, yeah. Please go ahead.
Somebody told me recently there are two kinds of people. I mean, I have my own two kind of people theory, but there's always another version of it. So concrete people and abstract people, and I added a third category to that, but concrete people are linear. They do their lives in a concrete way, and they're cause and effect types, and they don't really get into a lot of abstract concepts. Then there are the abstract people. You could say artists are more abstract than the concrete people, who are maybe the, postal workers or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are variations. There are abstract concrete people, concrete abstract people, concrete concrete, and abstract abstract. So maybe a concrete abstract person would be a person who lives in the matrix, has a life there, but is waking up to these ideas and saying, you know, there's more going on than meets the eye, and I've got to learn about it. And an abstract concrete person might be an artist type who isn't awake to all this. I don't know. I'm just kind of playing with forms.
Yes.
Here.
Yes.
But an abstract cosmic person is someone who gets the concepts of this, but knows that there's another level on which those concepts must be addressed. The concepts cannot be the problem, if you want to call this whole thing a big problem. The problem can't be addressed on the concrete level. There's nothing to be done. There are too many problems, and we don't have the materials to enact the solutions, the cause and effect, three-dimensional world solutions. You know, we can't tell them to stop spraying the chemtrails so that we can, like, dust off the trees and extract all the aluminum from the soil. It's already too late. So where is the solution? The solution is a cosmic metaphysical solution, and this is where I started to talk about we have to go through that eye of the needle into another whole new beginning dimension.
Mm.
And these terms are very nebulous, and a lot of people are going to feel extremely irritated and frustrated with talk like this, and I don't blame them.
Mm.
But on some level, we need to start experimenting with this. I said to somebody, yesterday, we, you and I, have to start communicating altogether differently. Not by email and not by phone and not by saying, let's get together and have a cup of coffee. We have to communicate on a level even different from that. Do you know what I mean?
I think I do, but tell us a little bit more about it.
We have to do connection through our being. I have to be able to talk to you without the phone. I have to be able to get a connection with you through my head or whatever else is in my head that I'm not using. We have to start magically telecommunicating. That is the unity consciousness that we need to create, because the unity they're creating is the hive.
Yes.
They're going to wire all our brains together. We're all going to have the same thoughts. We're all going to have Google in our brain. We won't have to look on the computer. So we've got to create a whole different unity that isn't about, you know, socialism or being drones.
Sure.
Or being all alike.
And, you know, I totally agree with you. I can say it in another way myself. I think that's also one of the reasons why we are actually being offered this kind of artificial version of that, because that's actually a drive that people actually have in the, you know, from the unconscious part of themselves. They do want to feel, I guess, more connected with the higher, you know, forces of this universe, pretty much, the higher energies, a more purposeful life in that regard. But we're being offered this, as you said, the Google brain version of this, the worldwide mind, the interconnectedness through the aid of technology. And that's why I think also that many people will kind of be fooled by that and go into that version of it instead of going to into the more natural, organic version of this. Do you see that as well?
Yes, that's a great way to put it. We forget that we have choices. We forget that we're being offered something. Maybe this is the grace of the collective gods up there, if there are any such things, that they're saying, look, humans, here, you can choose to be human beings or you can just choose to be human. What do you want?
So what did you do, or what do you do to kind of stay focused on this, so to speak? How do you break away from the victim mentality and the fear mode that comes along with a lot of this information?
Well, first of all, to me, learning more is an inspiring thing. It's not a thing that freaks me out very often. I mean, occasionally I have like a bad moment. I go, oh my God.
We all do.
But really, I get very excited. I think about who can I tell? And when I connect some dots myself in my own way, nobody's told me, for instance, figuring out, I mean, I could be wrong, but that the Morgellons are the failed experiments. They're not the successes. They're the failures. They're the people who aren't integrating the stuff. Then I say, wow. What about that? Where does that take me? And to me, making those connections is everything. It's like, I don't know, skydiving or something, you know?
Yes.
That's the thrill. It has become a thrill to be able to see with a capital S. Because we're not going to take this world back by force. We're going to take it back by seeing with a capital S. And we have to teach each other to see. And once you start seeing, once you go into that house of deceptions through any of the doors or windows, and you see all the different rooms, and you see all the different things that have been turned inside out and upside down and sold to us as real, then you start to see. You start putting it together, and it is amazing to be able to do that. So I get very excited by thinking like this. And I love expressing it, or trying to. I think my movie was one form of that expression, and now I have an online store, avatarproducts.com, A-V-A-T-A-R, products, and I create t-shirts and buttons. I created a little button, ask me about chemtrails, and I've received orders for 100 at a pop. People are buying that many at a time to give out and wear. So I love expressing. I love creating. We're here to create. Everything that happens in your life is something you have participated in terms of its creation. So it's time for us to start creating immediately. Mm. No, don't waste another minute.
I like that. I think this is a very good way of putting it. And again, I guess it draws things back to this mode of that solutions are going to come from the abstract in that sense. And also that we're, you know, as we discover a lot of this stuff, or just, you know, toss around the ideas about it, when we consider things, we experiment, sort of speak, with the thoughts, with our thinking. I think that we also actually feed this into the higher planes, or even our connectedness that you talked about before, which actually is aiding in one way or another this problem, so to speak. What I'm saying is that through the aid of just experimenting with these things in regards to coming up with solutions or thinking about it, we aid or put that energy, that frequency, into the true connected mind, so to speak. What do you think about that, Sophia?
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. The more we share our presence, literally our presence, the more we tell each other, I'm here for you, and we mean that, the more connected we become. We're going to have to do this all together. And it's going to take those bonds, those many, many, many little bonds that we make, and the meaning of those bonds. Because I walk outside and I'm a little distressed at the hive. I mean, these people, they're not me. I can't talk to most of them. I'm nice to them. I'm surprised at how nice I am to them. I'm not angry at them. I understand that there's something going on with their neurology that isn't going on with my neurology. They can't see what I can see. It's not just that they don't want to. It's that they can't. And so you and I probably feel pretty alone. But you know what? We know each other. And that helps. And pretty soon, the gaps are going to start closing. There are going to be more of us that wake up. And I guess you could say that it'll boil down to the quality of our connections. Even though we may never outnumber the hive, the quality of our connections is quite amazing.
Mm, I see what you mean. That's interesting. And I do want to ask you a little bit about if you are working on any other projects right now that goes into a little bit more about this? Are you working on any other films or something like this?
Well, I'd love to do a film on chemtrails, but I don't know when and I don't know how it's going to come together. I am starting to see the picture of that. It's becoming more of a reality. Working on About the Sky, which I began last June, just about a year now, that's been the basis of my exploration of this and experimenting with different ways to express it to people. What works? I think in many ways it's like trying to tell small children how babies are made. They just don't believe you. They can't conceive of it. It just doesn't make sense. Why would anyone do that? And the public is very much like small children being told about reproduction. They just don't believe it. No, my parents didn't do that. So how do you get past that? Do you have to wait till they're old enough? In this case, no. They're already old.
Right.
What are we waiting for? So how do you get that through to them?
Oh, and do you have any ideas about how we do that?
Well, you could challenge them. You could say, well, if I tell you what it really is, then you're not going to believe me. And they'll go, well, what is it? And you say, well, I'm not going to tell you because you won't believe me. And then they say, well, I want to know. Tell me. So you tell them, and they say, well, I don't believe you. And you say, see, I told you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that gets them. The fact that you already knew that they wouldn't believe it gives you somehow an edge. And then they come back the next day or the next day, and they go, what did you say? And you tell them another part of it, and then they go, okay, I see. Well, that doesn't really seem like it could be possible either. And you say, well, go back, live in the matrix. It's fine.
Well, that's what many do, but those of you who don't, that's worth the effort, so to speak, you know, to try to grab someone's attention, so to speak, and to give them something. If they, but again, I always come back to that idea that I think that there has to be something there in themselves to begin with, that they kind of ask that initial question, or that level of curiosity have to be there for them to really want to go there, so to speak. Otherwise, they'll see it as a form of attack almost. And the question is that wise, or is that even good to do that, you know?
Well, also, we have the possibility of acting or serving as an example. Most of these people in the matrix, in the hive, are not happy, and they know it. And this is why they keep chasing another car, another wife,
sure,
another job, or more stuff, or more debt, which is how they get more stuff. They're not happy. And when they see someone who isn't living the way that they live and doesn't have those concerns and isn't all enmeshed and submerged in this futility, that they know they're living in futility. They really do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you can serve as an example of something different, they become curious and they want to know, well, what makes you tick? They can't believe that the diet of this horrible stuff that you feed on is actually making you tick.
Mm.
That's a hurdle for them to get over. But you and I are experimenting with communication. We're messengers, and we're experimenting with different ways to get this across.
Yeah.
And it's going to work and it's not going to work. But the thing is, we have to enjoy doing it. We have to see it as a very freeing, inspiring thing to be doing. And we have to be enthralled by it. We have to be expressing joy, not
pessimism
grief.
And, that's what you mean.
Yeah, this is it. We were born at this time. Apparently we all elbowed other souls out of the way to get here.
Right.
Is it true? That's what they say. I can't believe it, but we're here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. Absolutely right. And, I want to go back to one thing, one other question that I had that came up here in regards to if we talk about the other people, the controllers, those who are trying to instigate this. If you have an idea or a theory or something like that in regards to what kind of mentality kind of spawned this, I guess this also ties a little bit together with this idea of what this technology comes from, but it has to be a certain kind of mentality to begin with that actually are putting this into effect and actually kind of is bringing it onto our society or into our society, so to speak. We don't necessarily have to go into that this is aliens or whatnot, but some people speculate that there is. Could it be some kind of mental disease or sickness? Do you have any ideas about this, Sophia?
Well, I think that the execution of these various programs in all of their forms, I mean, there are people on the level of local officialdom who laugh hard about the idea of chemtrails, that they're spraying the population, and those people are not high up on the chain, and surely they would care about this, you know, themselves, because don't they have little grandchildren running around and that kind of thing? But they don't appear to believe it or care about it. And so I feel that human fear, that reptilian fear instinct, that low brain, old brain fear instinct and reflex is being harnessed here in a big way. And that serves to keep all these people in line. Now, whether this is conscious or somehow employed in these people on an unconscious level, I don't know. But that goes all the way up the pyramid to the highest levels. And I'm just wondering if the elite have gotten a ticket or a pass through the decimation of the earth that is clearly the direction we're going in.
Mm.
And
well,
so all of their horses, so to speak, that rein, that system of reins, R-E-I-N-S, is connecting all those horses. That's a chariot. And you and I, we're the flock that is being chased by that chariot. Or I'm using weird analogies here, but
I get your point. Yeah.
So I don't really know how this is perpetuated through the pyramid, apart from that it does the consciousness that created this knows how to use, harness, employ, utilize, channel human baseness and human fear. And that's how it can be done among us and by us to each other.
Mm. Well, Sophia, what we'll do is obviously continue search for the answers, throw around the ideas and thoughts about this and enjoy it while we're doing it. I think that's a very good way of putting it, and just doing what it is that we're doing and try to search for the answers. Sophia, I've really enjoyed having you on the program, and I think this is a good time to begin to wrap things up here for this time. I do want you to mention your websites for us again, and you mentioned another one, avatarproducts.com, and you have
a few. Yeah, that's my store.
Go ahead and give us the URLs for your websites again, Sophia.
Well, the information websites are 911weknow.com, aboutthesky.com, notincome.com, and 911mysteries.com. That's particularly for the DVD that I made. But the online store is Avatar Products, A-V-A-T-A-R, products.com. And I do sell a whole lot of things there that I've created, T-shirts and these information postcards. I have some wonderful cards about chemtrails that I print 50,000 at a time. So it's quite affordable, something you can hand out, buy in bulk. And I'm doing the global warming information card now as well. So I've done a series of 5 of these information postcards, and people seem to like them.
Mm, brilliant. Well, Sophia, I mean, keep up the great work, and we'd love to have you back here at some point and continue talking more as we kind of track what's going on in the world. Thank you very much again for joining us today, Sophia.
Henrik, thank you. I've been so pleased with the way that our conversation has flowed, and you've given me so many new ideas. So thank you very much for that.
That's our program with Sophia Smallstorm. Great to have you with us. We'll be back with more radio on Sunday, and heads up for our interview with Adrian Gilbert that we did at the AV2 conference. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth for helping making Red Ice what it is. We'll talk more later. Take good care.